On this episode of The Playbook, I have Arizona State University athletic director Ray Anderson. He may have graduated from Harvard Law School, but he has and knows the importance of radical humility and how to build a collaborative culture within a hyper-competitive space, not only through great facilities, but even more important, through people and teamwork. Join me through all of this and more on The Playbook. This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer. This is Dave Meltzer, CEO of Sports One Marketing with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I have, I shouldn't say an old friend, but a dear friend, Ray Anderson, the athletic director of Arizona State University, the Sun Devils, and we're here right in the conference room, ready to discuss something that I'm most interested in. Is Ray, welcome to the playbook, but I want to know the playbook to become an athletic director.
Well, David, I tell you, man, I didn't invent it, that's for sure. The typical route, as you know, is through administration. You start sometimes as a intern, you wake your way up through the ladder, but kind of in the same department, or certainly in the same flow path. I wasn't that traditionalist.
Me neither.
You either.
Right.
And so I ended up here through a circuitous course, mostly through being an agent, then being with a team, being at the league. Always spent a lot of time on campus because we represented coaches, and when you're evaluating players, you're scouting, you're evaluating, spent time on campus, but never with the intent or thought that I'd be an athletic director at all.
Right. But, you know, I always say to kids when they ask me how to be a sports agent, I said, you got to develop the skills.
True.
And gain the knowledge and have the desire, because, you know, if you don't really want it, somebody else really does. And you got that playing sports, but you went to law school.
Mm-hmm.
Why'd you go to law school?
Well, I went to law school because my father, who passed away early, had planned to be a lawyer as a young boy coming up through 9 years old. Once he passed away, then that kind of became my focus. I wanted to be a lawyer. Didn't really understand what it meant, but learned over time through teachers and others who schooled me about that. And so I went to law school with the thought that I'd be a lawyer. Not with the thought that I'd be a sports agent or a litigator or certainly not an athletic director. But I went to law school because it was something that was kind of ingrained in me as a young boy.
And, you know, you went to some significant schools. I was joking around the first time we interviewed years back. I said, it's hard for me to give this interview because I've been rejected. My favorite school on earth, Stanford. I apologize to be here, but they rejected me for undergrad and law school. I actually thought I had a chance for law school. But then you outdo yourself going to Stanford. You go to Harvard Law School.
Yeah. Well, I was fortunate. And it all started really with the folks when you're in grade school and junior high and high school, in my case, had really taken an interest in me personally. And so just were not going to let me falter academically, and always stress that. So fortunately, I was able to get into Stanford and do well enough academically to actually apply and get admitted to Harvard Law School. So I've been very lucky, very fortunate, both great institutions, and I'm really glad I went to both of them.
What do you think the advantage is? You know, all my siblings went to Harvard, Penn, Columbia. Mm-hmm. But what do you think the true advantage is of, you know, graduating from Harvard Law School compared to, like, Tulane? Is it a long-term effect, or what do you think the number one advantage of going to a school like Harvard is?
Yeah. Well, no disrespect to Tulane.
No, obviously not. No, but we all know the top tier, right?
But the perception.
Yeah, exactly.
The perception is that if you're able to go to a school like that and graduate, then people give you a significant benefit of the doubt.
To start with.
It's just kind of ingrained in us. So you go into literally every situation with probably a competitive edge that is attached to graduating from a place like Harvard or Yale or Princeton or Stanford.
Sure.
Or Tulane. Certainly.
Just kidding.
No question. So,
but was there more pressure when you're there, though, because people have a higher expectation? Do you ever feel that? Because as a boss, mm-hmm. I've hired kids from the Ivy Leagues, and I allow that same perception to happen, and then I have higher expectations. But yet, they're still 24 years old. And I think that somehow, you know, it was Myron Rowe, right? Remember Myron?
Yeah.
One of my favorite
clients,
at least.
DB.
Yeah, DB.
Rhodes
Scholar.
Rhodes Scholar.
Right, but
Florida State.
Florida State.
Yeah.
Forgot that he was 21.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, although he's the first client I've ever had to say, Mr. Meltzer, query.
Mm-hmm. Query.
Right? Yeah. And ask me questions that were really deep. I still forgot that he's 21.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there is, you look at my siblings, you know, who all went to those schools, they got great advantages to start, but there's more pressure on them because people are like, oh, that's the Harvard kid.
Yeah,
he's
summa
cum laude from Harvard.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there are some expectations that go along with the privilege of going to a place like that.
Yeah.
And that's just part of the deal.
Yeah.
And you have to take that on. And so, yes, when I left Harvard Law School and I went to my firm initially, a law firm in Atlanta, Georgia, I don't think there was any question that folks looked at me and said, hey, that's the Harvard guy. You know, you expect a little more in terms of the quality of the work.
Yeah, and even worse for you, you married a woman named Buffy. So you go to Stanford, Harvard Law School, and marry a girl named Buffy.
Yeah.
Your expectations are like, who is this guy?
Yeah, now,
he's right
now,
from the comic book.
It's like preppy to the hilt.
Exactly.
Those are great opportunities to get higher education at places that, very frankly, people will give you, like I say, the benefit of the doubt. They'll give you a little more leeway, as a matter of fact, but it also comes with expectations, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to deal with that.
I am as well. Now, you go to a law firm to be a litigator.
Mm-hmm.
What skills do you think you learned the most litigating that help you today as an AD?
Preparation, and the realization that there's just no substitute for just hard work and preparation. And a lawyer's role, particularly a litigator, where discovery and research and preparation way in advance of ever getting in front of an arbitrator or a panel or a jury is absolutely the most important thing you do. So that translates really into everything I did in my business life, but certainly here, preparation is key. It's vital, doing your due diligence, doing your research, getting the appropriate input, getting ready, and then when you make the case, hopefully you're very prepared and you're more able to deal with surprises or curveballs, et cetera. So preparation is absolutely foremost.
Now, on the administrative side, like you said, the traditional route is to build that administrative experience, understand the culture of the institution, build your reputation within. There's a budgetary side.
Sure.
That you don't really get as a litigator.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In fact, I was a litigator myself, and you know, the reason I wanted to be a litigator, I didn't want to deal with those details afterwards, right? I wanted the other kids to do the research for me. I wanted to speak. And how did you develop those skills? Because budget's a huge business issue for you.
Well, along the lines, you get a real appreciation for accounting and finance. And in law school, you take an accounting course, or you should. part of what I did to advance my opportunity is that I actually studied financing. At one point, I had a Series 22, I think it was, a license from that I got back in Massachusetts.
Underachiever, right?
Yeah, by taking additional courses in finance and management and investments. But then the real trick is to know that you come into a place and you know what you don't know, which means you then look to your finance folks and your internal accountants, and you give those folks a lot of responsibility and a lot of runway to do it right, keep you informed, and then you delegate to people with the appropriate expertise, but never, ever just completely delegating and saying, you just do it, I'm not interested. I'm always interested in being briefed and kept in the loop, so when the final decisions are made, I'm all over them. But in terms of the expertise and the nuances of finances and accounting and budget, et cetera, I leave to the experts who are part of my team.
And you do a really great job, including one of your latest hires, right? You hired a friend, someone that you had worked with at the NFL, I
think. Frank Ferrar came with me as our chief financial officer for Sun Devil Athletics. In my 8 years at the NFL running football operations, he was the finance budget leader for my unit for 8 years. So I certainly went back to someone that I knew and trusted who could come in here, and culturally we were in sync. He knew what my expectations were. He could come in here and get up to speed very quickly on what goes on in a athletic budget and finance arena, not very different, very frankly, than what goes on at the NFL pro level. So you go and get really good people around you, then you delegate to them, let them do their job, and you know what? You got a chance of being pretty good.
How old were you? There's, you know, when I look at you, I think of radical humility. And it's something that I had to, through my career in my 30s when I retired and was an idiot and didn't humbly tell you right now, I wasn't radically humble. So I wrote those two words on my nightstand, and I said, from today on, I'm going to wake up and pray to God for 10 people I can help. Because mm-hmm. that's where that humility starts. For you, you know, with all the pedigree from everything from Harvard, Stanford, and Buffy, all the pedigree you have, you know, to understand, which took me later on in life to understand, that if I elevate others, I elevate myself. And Lee had this great saying, be kind to your future self.
True.
And yeah. it seems to me, from Herm to Frank and others around you, that you understood that at a much younger age than I did. Where did the humility come from? Who helped inspire you?
Well, first of all, thank you for the compliment for radical humility. And I'm a believer that you are at your best when you have the best around you in terms of teammates and support group. And if you have that, you got a chance to be wildly successful, because you're not just depending on yourself, you're depending on a team. And I learned that early on, and that started, very frankly, with my freshman high school coach, a guy named Lloyd Parkson, who actually, when we showed up as real cocky junior high kids, beat everybody in football, baseball, basketball, we come into high school and our football coach is Lloyd Parkson, who is a Marine who had landed on Iwo Jima and survived that war, and then ended up coming back and being a Marine instruction officer. And so when we showed up, there was Lloyd Parkson, all 6'2" of them, you know, white, shaved head, grizzled, and
like Paul Wiggins, it sounds like.
Paul Wiggins. That is a very good example. Yeah. Paul Wiggins, our former coach at Stanford.
You young people got to look up Paul Wiggins. Yeah, but that's what.
And we showed up, and he made sure that across the board we understood you're only as good as all of you are. There are no stars. It is about the team. And he really drove that in us and in me. And I give Coach Parkson more credit than anybody in my life for driving home that you better be humble and you better be appreciative of everyone around you, because without them, you know what? You will die. You will not be successful. And that drove it. From then on, I was always about, okay, what's my team look like? Everyone's got a role. In success, and that's kind of been my marching orders, and that's why, very frankly, I've had some success, because it's about the team, delegating, not micromanaging, and then giving everybody, when it is appropriate, give everybody the risk, but also give everybody the rewards.
And what do you, in that meritocracy, what do you instill or empower to allow them to make their own decisions, right? We're not micromanagers. What values that you know, for me, I understand we empower people with values so they can make their own decision based on the values that we have as a collective. What values are the ones that you look at when you're empowering your associates and employees, et cetera?
The thing we say about around here all the time, David, is that culture is just not important. Culture is everything. So we set in advance a culture of teamwork, no selfishness. Think through unintended consequences for the good of the group, not just for the self. And then core values like, you know what, family really does come first, and work-life balance really is important, and communication and very honest, genuine, consistent communication is really critical to our way forward. And those are really our core values, and we just try to instill and then live those, not just talk them, but live them by example up and down our chain of command.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed different here, I'm blessed to have gone to tons of universities and blessed with friendships like yours, but the one thing that stood out when I walked through this office was the one word I don't see often. I see integrity. Mm-hmm. I see commitment. I see consistency, right? I see pursuit. You know, any wooden type of of success triangle. But very rarely do I see straight out on the wall graduation. And I, like, to me, I went to Occidental College because it's the only place that let me play football. But my mom loved it because when she, I was recruited by San Diego State and other places, and they talked about their graduation rate with their players. And my mom went to Occidental, Coach Weedoff at the time, a very winning coach for that league, said, she said, well, how many of your players graduated? He said, 70%. And she said, only 70%? He said, no, I'm sorry, 70% going to graduate school. I'm sorry, everyone graduates.
Right, right. Right?
That's the feeling and energy expectation I get from you.
And we're very proud of that because they are student athletes. Student is first and foremost. And through Gene Boyd, who runs our Office of Student Athletics Development, and Andrea Lohr and Alonzo Jones down there, they've done a marvelous job for years now, before I came on board, in advancing the fact that graduation is first and foremost. And then certainly in my time here, we have stressed that time and time again that the academic pursuits here are first and foremost, and we want student athletes to accept that across all sports. Graduation is key, man, because we're in the business development, we're in the leadership development business. And if they're not graduating from here, we have failed miserably. So graduation and graduation rights and APR, academic progress rates and reports for us are critically important to what we're doing. So graduation is paramount. Otherwise, we've let these young men and women down and we've failed miserably and we shouldn't be here.
Right. And I, my favorite NCAA commercial was the one that said 233,000 student athletes and only so many are going to be professionals.
There's no question.
Everyone will be professional in something else. Yep. And, you know, I'm part of that tribe and so are you, where, you know, that professionalism empowers and changes and has great social impact, which is important to both, which leads me to a question. So many people want to get involved in sports, and I try to tell them sports is not a profession, it's an industry, right? So develop skills, knowledge, and find what you have a passion for. And it's okay to be profitable with that passion. What advice would you give someone that would like to get into, you know, college administration, athletic director? What skills, you know, I'm not going to talk about where you go or what, but really, what skills would you advise them to start developing at a younger age?
Yeah, well, they have to, in my view, be willing to be a utility player and don't limit your entry point. Be willing, literally, to relocate, to do whatever you're asked to do. You've got to get in the door because it's an industry where everybody wants to get in, but everybody is not willing to do whatever it takes in terms of developing a skill set and getting started to get in. They want to narrow down their focus. I want to be an athletic director at a Power Five school on the West Coast. Well, so does everybody else. You know, you've got to be willing to go be a first-tier administrator at a Division III school up in Delaware, if that's what it takes. So cast a wide net. Be willing to essentially sacrifice some of the comforts of home, if you will, to get out there and really then be able to demonstrate, first of all, your passion and then your ability to think outside of the norm, outside of the box is the cliche, and be willing to do some different things that a lot of first-time entry-level folks maybe aren't willing to do.
Right. And when you don't limit your entry point, it involves something called patience, which the older we get, the more we get, but the younger we are, it's very difficult. I'm going to steal that from you. I'll give you credit.
Please
but
do.
That's good. I love, don't limit your point of entry or your entry point. Last question. All the things that you have been able to achieve, both personally with your family, just and here at the school and the NFL, and you know, even as a lawyer and an agent, what is the legacy that you'd like to leave?
Legacy is a big word, and sometimes the concept of it is a little bit shocking to me. But what I would tell you is that when I leave this earth, I really would just like folks to think back and say, you know what, that guy made a difference. That guy made my life or some other folks' lives that I'm aware of just a little bit better. He just made a difference because he cared. That's really what I'd like to leave when I leave from here, David. That they look back and say, you know, Ray Anderson, he was a pretty cool guy.
right?
You know, he kind of made a difference.
Well, I think
that's all I look to do.
From what I've heard around, I think that's already happening. So you're on the great track. I love the fact that not only have you made a difference, but you brought into this podcast the one person that made a huge difference in your life was your high school football coach.
There's no question.
And I have the same feeling towards mine, although, you know, our careers have been these crazy careers that, you know, parallel. I say to anyone out there that's an entrepreneur, a teacher, a mentor, you can change one life and end up, you know, somehow participating in extraordinary lives. Even though you may not feel what you're doing is extraordinary, it has an extraordinary impact.
Yeah, my Coach Parkson, he went on a reunion with his Iwo Jima colleagues who survived. They went back to Iwo Jima. And this is years later. I still have a little sandwich bag of sand that he brought me back from the beach of Iwo Jima. And when he came back, he sent me a bag of sand with a note reminding me of all the things we had done and the times we had spent talking together, because he kind of took me on as kind of a surrogate son, knowing my story.
Yeah.
And I still have it in my safe deposit box.
That's awesome.
Back home. A little baggie of sand from Iwo Jima from Coach Lloyd Parkson.
A little inspiration in a bag.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate, Ray, your
my
time.
Pleasure,
I know you're
David.
Busy.
Always
keep the Pac-12 thriving.
Well,
in my family.
It's very competitive, but we're trying to make strides.
Well, as long as you're graduating kids, I think that's what's most important.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate
it. Absolutely. Our pleasure.
Don't limit yourself. Be kind to your future self. I'm here with Ray Anderson. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneur, The Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.